Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The Love Song of Ivy K. Harlow by Hannah Moskowitz. Narrated by Lori Prince. September. It's just about midnight on a Friday night, and I'm spending it the same way I usually do, trying to figure out whether a girl who could not be less interested in me is gay. She's about 5 feet away from me, leaning back against the bar and tapping her nails, a little long, on her rocks glass in time to the music. Her hair is hacked off, but that might not mean anything. The fact that she's here at Kinetic on a Friday night doesn't necessarily mean anything either. Providence doesn't have a dedicated lesbian club, so Kinetic's population consists of mostly gay guys, a lot of straight girls, and every once in a while, a girl who doesn't look at you like she thinks you're going to rear up and bite her if you dare to say hi. Not that I ever do. There's a lot of comfort in telling yourself that every girl who doesn't immediately fall in love with you is straight. I'm good with staying in that comfort. Besides, there's safety in numbers, and my friends have all abandoned me. Alyssa, who has about as little luck with girls as I do, but with the addition of some inexplicable optimism, is over at the other end of the bar, buying drinks for a girl who's definitely going to smile sweetly and kiss her on the cheek and walk away in a minute or two. Melody and Diana are the mate-for-life types, and I can't see them. But they're for sure over on one of the couches in the back, making out like this is their only opportunity to do it. And Ivy... well, Ivy is where Ivy always is, in one location or another, the center of everything going on. Silent and calculated, moving so perfectly it's like the music is following her and not the other way around. Locked in eye contact with the second hottest girl in the room. Ivy's hair is cherry coke brown in the bouncing lights of the dance floor, and she's poured into a black tank dress that rides dangerously high up her thighs as she moves. She's looking at the girl she's with like she's the only person in here. Ivy always does. But every fucking one else in here, including the maybe lesbian I've been eyeing for the past half hour, is looking at her. Ivy has freckles and dimples and bright green eyes, and with someone else's energy, she'd be adorable. But there is nothing cute about Ivy. She is ice and hot metal and electricity. There is something about her where you know she could ruin your life in a word if she wanted to. And she always, always might want to. She is, without fail, the hottest girl in the room. I'm mostly here to drive her home, usually with whatever girl she's chosen for the night licking at her neck in the backseat of my shitty secondhand sedan. It's actually my parents. They just lent it to me for this. Alyssa comes over, draining her cocktail down to the ice, the rim tapping against the nose of her glasses. She's wearing a t-shirt and jeans because she wants people to think she's not trying too hard, whereas I'm wearing a t-shirt and jeans because I'm here half the nights of my damn life and the novelty of dressing hot for no reward wore off sometime in the first year. Besides, I've never been a real femme like Ivy is, though I don't have the commitment to go full butch either. I just exist in this kind of gray area, but I have dozens of piercings and some big, colorful tattoos, so it's not like people don't know I'm gay. Alyssa sighs and sets her glass down heavily on the bar next to me. She passes for straight, incidentally, and guys hit on her a lot because she has long eyelashes and dark curly hair and big tits. But she's a whole 6 on the Kinsey scale and has, for whatever reason, never had much success with girls. It's kind of a running joke at this point, but probably not at all that funny to her. No luck, I yell over the music. She had to go meet her girlfriend. Of course. Didn't there used to be single lesbians in Rhode Island? Where the hell did they go? Not Boston, Alyssa says. She's about to start her sophomore year at BU, heading back up there on Monday. From what she's reported back, last year wasn't the wild, queer, utopian collegiate experience she'd been promised. It's not like my towny time spent here working was any better. Maybe they're invisible, I say. Maybe we are. She nods toward the dance floor. Doesn't look like everyone's having trouble. Ivy's now lip-locked with her target, her fingers digging into her waist. I say, Ivy having trouble picking up a girl? Wouldn't that be one of the signs of the apocalypse? I think it's more like an urban legend. The Providence version of Sasquatch is Ivy Harlow not getting laid. I ask the bartender for a water. I have a fake ID, obviously. How else would I have been coming here since I was 17? But I have to stay sober enough to get Ivy home. And Alyssa opens up Tinder and starts scrolling through nearby girls. It feels a little like cheating at whatever the fuck it is we're all here to do. But it's a good way to check who around you is a girl interested in girls. I can tell from the nonchalant way Alyssa keeps glancing up at one girl dancing with a group as she's scrolling through at lightning speed that she's looking for her specifically. Which, of course, doesn't mean she's going to kill her chances with anyone else. She's swiping right on everyone. All of a sudden, Ivy's here. She leans across the bar and orders a whiskey, then returns to her feet next to me, stretching like a cat. Ivy's tall anyway, almost my height. And in her 5-inch heels, she somehow walks in as easily as slippers. She towers over Alyssa like she's a different species. What are you doing here? I say. You're wearing a lot more clothes than I thought you'd be next time I saw you. Ivy shrugs carelessly, the strap of her dress incidentally slipping down one skinny bronzed shoulder.
I lost interest. It was too easy.
Too easy to bring a girl home with you? Alyssa says, deadpan. Something bad needs to happen to you someday. Nobody can be this lucky. I give Alyssa a look. Lucky isn't a word I'd use to describe Ivy's life. But Ivy either doesn't hear her over the pounding bass beat or charitably pretends not to.
I need a challenge, Ivy says,
raking her fingers through her hair. She has that kind of wavy, shiny hair that always lays right and never tangles.
At this rate, I'll get stale, and we can't have that. If I'm going to be stuck in this shit town forever, I have to find a way to stay sharp.
Ivy's in college, too, at the University of Rhode Island on full scholarship, but she commutes the half hour each day to campus from the crappy house that she shares with her mom, whenever she's actually around.
Here lies Ivy, ruined by too much sex, Alyssa says.
I don't need to wish anything bad on you. You're going to get struck down by blasphemy.
Lightning strike in the middle of the club, I say.
Ivy retrieves her drink and takes a sip, scanning the crowd.
Where's the married couple?
Ivy says the word married the way my mother says Republican. Always has. The couple in question is Melody and Diana, our resident polyamorous power couple and the last two members of our motley crew. We met them as a unit here a couple years ago. Alyssa's been my friend since 10th grade algebra, and Ivy... Well, we go way back. Couches, I say. They're not going to get off each other for hours. Melody scored some E somehow.
That bitch never shares her shit. I'm so over it.
Ivy cranes her neck over my head at Alyssa.
Hey, what are you doing?
Alyssa holds up her phone.
Let me see,
Ivy says, and she squishes in close, snaking her arm around my waist. She smells like lemon and jasmine.
Oh, God, not her. She has this awful girlfriend, and they're always trying to pull in some unsuspecting victim.
Alyssa hesitates, but finally swipes left.
No, Ivy says on the next one. Way too filtered. Who knows what she actually looks like?
Left again.
Oh, she's good. I slept with her last summer. Nice apartment.
Gets a little clingy, but...
They all do. Saw her in line for the bathroom about an hour ago if you want to track her down.
Alyssa swipes right. No match.
That's a shame.
Ivy raises her drink to her mouth, then lowers it and narrows her eyes when Alyssa swipes to the next girl.
Hang on. Who's that?
According to the name at the top of the profile, it's Dot, She has black hair, long and wavy, and, at least in her profile picture, pouty copper-red lips and big eyes with perfectly winged liner. She's looking artfully away from the camera, one hand holding her hair back from her face. "She's in here," Alyssa says. "She is not 21.
"Neither are we,"
Ivy says, looking around. "And by the time we turn 21, maybe she'll be eating solid foods and sleeping through the night."
"Her profile says 18, Ivy says, "a year younger than us."
"I will take a vow of celibacy if she's 18, I say.
Ivy laughs.
"And that'd be different from your current state, how?"
"Hey!"
The song changes. The crowd on the dance floor shifts a little, and Ivy points across the room.
There.
I'm surprised Ivy recognized her, honestly. The girl standing on the edge of the dance floor with a death grip on her drink and a scared shitless expression on her face doesn't exactly match the Tinder profile, but, you know, who among us ever did?
Alyssa groans.
God, Ivy, leave her alone. She's the dictionary definition of baby gay. Ivy finishes her drink.
So she needs to feel welcome.
That girl is not going home with you, I say.
Ivy gives me a brief kiss, and my whole world is peach lip gloss for a moment.
Famous last words,
she says, and she tweaks my nose and saunters across the dance floor, bodies parting for her like the Red Sea. She heads straight to Dot, without faking any kind of nonchalance, and immediately she's bending down a foot to say something in her ear. I always wonder what she says to girls. Maybe when you look like that, it doesn't matter. Dot nods, and Ivy steals her drink and takes a sip. It's some pink thing. Then makes a face and sets it aside. She takes Dot's hand and pulls her slowly out to the dance floor, and Dot follows without resisting. A look on her face I know way too well. I've seen it on every fucking lesbian in the state at this point. The wide eyes, the slightly parted lips. It's the face you make when Ivy chooses you.
She is pretty, Alyssa says.
Ivy likes older girls, I say. I don't know why she's pretending like she wants to teach a new dog old tricks.
Imagine Ivy being your lesbian welcoming committee, Alyssa says. I can't decide if she'd do more scaring off or converting.
We could put her on recruitment and find out.
Yeah. Send her to Boston.
I turn back to the bar. I really don't need to watch Ivy's indoctrination program. I'm an old dog, and they are old tricks, and order something stronger.
A guy comes up with his boyfriend and compliments Alyssa's glasses, and she starts talking to him about face shapes and polarized lenses and online discount codes like they've known each other for years. Alyssa could find friends in a vacuum. I try not to look at Ivy and Dot, but every time I do, it's like I've been fast-forwarding through a softcore porno. First their hands are on each other, then they're kissing. Then Ivy is hiking her leg up to wrap around Dot's little waist and pull her closer. They're back over to me before my drink is finished. Ivy's hand on the small of Dot's back. Dot's eyes on Ivy.
This is Alyssa and Andy,
Ivy says to Dot, her voice smooth.
We're ready to go, she says to me.
I look at Dot. Her face reminds me of my brother psyching himself up for a roller coaster.
I sigh.
Hi, Andy.
I'm Dot, she says.
Do you want to go home with her?
Ivy raises an eyebrow at me, but Dot takes a moment. She looks up at Ivy, and something in her eyes is calculating. Like she's seeing how the whole night is going to go from here, and I want to tell her that she has no fucking idea, that she's in way over her head. Because who wouldn't be with Ivy?
But what do I really know about it?
Yeah, Dot says after a moment, and she turns back to me. Of course. Alyssa's enjoying her new friends and eyeing a new group of girls who just came in, and says she'll catch a ride home with Melody and Diana whenever they release each other. So I leave with Ivy and Dot, spilling out of the club and toward the lot 2 blocks away where I left my car. We're up on College Hill, and the street's covered with brown and RISD kids standing in line for cheap pizza or stumbling back to their dorms. Dot's a little slow in her high heels, and she lags behind Ivy, who snarks to me,
"Do you really think I didn't make sure she wanted to come?"
"Can't be too careful."
"I can rescue my own damsels, thanks. Or is this interrogation thing a new role you provide?"
"What, you mean along with my taxi service? And only if they look like they were born during the Obama administration." Ivy glares at me and slows down to take Dot's hand. They get in the back seat together and are all over each other before I've even started the car. Christ. I roll my eyes and adjust the rearview mirror so I don't have to look at them.
"Yeah, you're welcome for the ride," I mumble to myself,
wondering, like I always do, why the hell I always agree to do this shit. God, I don't even agree. I volunteer. I weave us around the college kids, down the hill, into the lights of the city, and south to good old Elmwood, the neighborhood where Ivy and I have lived since we were little kids making pillow forts and mixing nail polish colors and teaching each other how to kiss. Or, I guess, she taught me. I don't really wonder why I volunteer for this shit. I just wish I did. Elmwood's one of the shittier parts of the city, and I kind of expect Dot to try to back out when she sees where we're headed. She wouldn't be the first prospective girl of Ivy's to do it, and she doesn't exactly look streetwise. But she doesn't care. Or maybe just doesn't notice with her face and hands otherwise occupied, feeling up my best friend in my back seat, and there's no protest as I turn onto Ivy's block. And then immediately stop, because her street is crowded with police cars, firefighters, and a bunch of people gathered on the sidewalk. "Ivy," I say. "Mm," she says, her hands on Dot's waist, their lips together. "Ivy!" She pulls away and shoots daggers at me in the rearview mirror.
"What?"
"Your house is on fire." There's a second where none of us moves, and then all three of us scramble out, leaving the cars open and beeping in protest as we run down the rest of the block, weaving through the crowd until we're on the sidewalk. The shithole, formerly known as Ivy's house, is smoking pathetically, one wall completely gone and the other is not much better. Bits of charred roof and furniture strewn into the front lawn. The firefighters are packing up their equipment, ready to go. Holy shit. Somehow what comes out of my mouth is, "How many fucking times did your landlord say he was going to fix the wiring?" "Oh my God," Dot says. "Was anyone in there?" I shake my head. "Her mom's in Costa Rica. Fuck, Ives, you could have been in there." Ivy's staring at the house, her eyes slightly narrowed like she's trying to figure it out. "God. Wow," Dot says. She puts her hand on Ivy's arm. "I'm glad you're okay." "She's not okay," I snap, "because who the fuck is she to be here? To be part of this, to act like it really matters to her world whether this person she's known for half an hour burned alive or not. She could have died. If this happened last night, she would have been in there."
"But I wasn't,"
Ivy says flatly. "Still. God, all your shit. All your school stuff, your clothes. All the crafts we made when we were little. Her half of the construction paper heart that says, best friends forever. Though fuck if I'm about to say that in front of Dot." I take her hand. "Ivy." Ivy's still looking at her house like she's making a decision. And I think about Dot's face at the club when she was looking up at her. 2 natural disasters in one night. She's so fucking beautiful in the streetlight and the smoke. Her mouth quirks up into a smile.
"Good,"
she says quietly.
"Good. Burn it all down."
Ivy doesn't want to talk to the cops tonight. She says she'll take care of that tomorrow. So we get out of there before anyone can ask us to identify ourselves. I doubt it'll end up being much of an investigation. The wires in that house have been sparking for God knows how long, and it's not like there was anyone to gain anything from burning it down. And despite the number of girls in this town Ivy's loved and then left, I don't think anyone actually wants to kill her. I could be wrong.
Why's your mom in Costa Rica? Dot asks.
We've driven the car a few blocks away, and now we're sitting against the hood just decompressing. She's teaching yoga to starving orphans, Ivy says. I expect that to confuse Dot. I don't know, but she just smiles a little. Ivy digs around in her purse for her vape pen, takes a long pull, and then gives it to Dot, even though I hold out my hand. Dot hesitates.
Just hold the button and breathe in, Ivy says.
Is it pot?
Ivy laughs.
Yeah, you don't have to, it's okay.
I just never have before. She pauses one more second, then wraps her lips around it and breathes in.
Hold, Ivy says.
Hold.
Pull in a little fresh air. Don't breathe out. Good. You're natural.
I roll my eyes and take the pen.
Andy used to always cough when she was your age,
Ivy says. Dot clears her throat, obviously trying not to cough.
I'm not as young as I look, she says.
Ivy chuckles.
Good. How old are you?
She pauses.
Oh, come on, Ivy says. You think I'm going to go back to Kinetic and tell them you snuck in? If they started kicking out everyone who wasn't 21, they'd go out of business.
She rubs her skinny arms to warm up. 17. I just turned.
When?
Ivy says. August 15th. Ivy laughs a little more. Her birthday's the 16th. I guess she thinks that's cute or something.
How old are you?
Dot says. Ivy takes the pen from me and pulls a long drag.
19.
She doesn't mention that she just turned 2. Ivy's 6 months younger than me, which seemed like a decade when we were younger. She was the little one. I was supposed to take care of her. It's almost laughable now, except that it's not. Dot's mesmerized.
Are you in college?
She nods.
You are I.
What are you studying?
Fashion merchandising,
she says, still holding her breath. Dot climbs onto the hood of the car.
The next generation Anna Wintour.
I don't know who that is, but I guess Ivy does, because she watches her, finally exhaling.
Yeah,
she says after a beat.
We'll see.
How long have you been going to clubs like this? Dot asks.
We both know what Dot's really asking here. How long has Ivy been a professional lesbian? But Ivy just says,
a while.
This is sort of my first time, Dot says, being out like this.
Ivy keeps her eyes on her.
I figured.
They have this long moment of just looking at each other, and Dot is still sitting on my car, and to be honest, any patience I had for this little lesbian mentorship program is just about out. Okay, Cinderella, I say to Dot. Where can I drop you off? Ivy turns to me.
We're going to your house,
she says, like it's obvious. We're going to my house. She's going home.
I'm not going home, Dot says. I told my parents I was sleeping over at my friend's house.
Okay, I said. So where's your friend's house?
I can't show up there at 1 in the morning.
She's coming with us,
Ivy says, fixing me with a hard stare. I chew the inside of my cheeks.
Come on, Andy,
she says with a little pout.
We don't have anywhere else to go.
She puts an arm around Dot and tugs her in close, and she comes willingly, her chin tilted up and her eyes on Ivy.
God, what the fuck else can I do? The kid clearly came out tonight with no plan outside of finding someone to whisk her away for a night.
And can we just take a fucking moment to roll our eyes at the fact that not only is she successful her very first night out, she's fucking Ivy Harlow successful. Ivy's newly homeless and has just been through some kind of trauma, whether or not she knows it. And my mom is the type who would eat me alive if she found out I let her go to a hotel or something after that instead of bringing her somewhere safe. My mom is also the type who doesn't give much of a shit about casual lesbian sex under her roof, which sounds like a good thing until you need an excuse to not let your best friend fuck a stranger in your brother's old bedroom. God damn it.
You want to come with me?
Ivy says to Dot, softly, with the kind of tenderness she'll give one girl for one night and never again. And Dot nods without breaking eye contact with her. One night and never again. God, fine. If Dot doesn't want to let me save her, so be it. I drive the 5 minutes between Ivy's house and mine, which isn't exactly a palace either, but at least it's probably not going to catch fire at a moment's notice. We leave the lights off and rush quietly up the stairs so we don't wake up my parents, and Ivy, as predicted, leads Dot straight to my brother's room. I guess I should be grateful she didn't assume she was getting mine. Max moved in with his then-girlfriend, now-wife, 4 years ago, so his room has become sort of our makeshift guest room, complete with his old clothes still in the dresser and Bruins posters on the walls. Ivy says something in Dot's ear and leaves her standing in the center of Max's room with her arms around herself while Ivy comes over to the doorway. She smiles at me, leaning her head against the door frame. "Thank you," she says, her eyes soft and twinkly. "Yeah, whatever." She smacks a kiss on my cheek.
"You're my favorite."
"I know. Have fun." She glances back at Dot.
"Oh, I will."
Ivy goes back into the room, leaving the door slightly open. And I don't go right away, even though I know I should. I watch Ivy slide up to Dot and speak to her softly. And when Dot nods, Ivy lifts her chin with two fingers. And then she does something weird. Something I've never seen her do, and I've seen Ivy kiss hundreds of girls. She hesitates. Right before their lips touch, she pauses, glancing up from Dot's lips and into her eyes. And there's something so un-Ivy-like in the way she looks. Nervous. That I convince myself it's a trick of the light or something. They're kissing a minute later. Ivy's hands in Dot's hair, gripping the back of her neck. Dot's fingers searching the hem of Ivy's dress, and all of a sudden I don't want to watch anymore. I close their door and go to my room, where Ivy and I have had 1,000 sleepovers and never had sex. I get out of my clothes and wash the glitter off my face and flop down on my bed and try to ignore the noises from the next room. And when that doesn't work, I turn up the music on my phone, reach over to my bookshelf, pull out one of my favorite romance novels, and lose myself in it until I fall asleep. My parents have already heard about Ivy's combusted house when I come down to breakfast the next morning, even though Ivy herself is still in bed. My mom's a nurse, which is like having access to the world's fastest tip line. She knows what's going on in Providence before it's even happened. "I told you that place was a death trap," she says, spatula in her hand, my father's greatest dad apron around her waist. "Don't know how many times I told Ivy, hire Mike, get him to fix that place before you explode." Mike is our handyman, whom my mom might believe has magical powers. And look what happens. "I'm not sure it really exploded," I say. "More of a gentle boil." Dad turns the page in his newspaper, his reading glasses balanced on the tip of his crooked nose.
"How's Ivy handling it?"
I shrug. "It's Ivy."
"I assume she's here," my dad says.
And Mom laughs.
"She's here, all right," she says. And I know exactly what she was doing, unless that was poor and someone was blasting at 2 a.m.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?